This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. It is 5 p.m. on Saturday, September 14th. I'm Jenny Nyman, and it's time for the Kenai Conversation. The following hour is a rebroadcast of this week's Kenai Conversation. This program aired live at 10 a.m. Wednesday. It is election season, coming up on the municipal election on October 1st. So for the next few weeks on the Kenai Conversation, we'll be speaking with candidates for municipal offices. On this week's show, we had candidates for the District 1 Kalifornsky seat on the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District Board of Education. We had a little trouble with our recording at the beginning of the show, so we unfortunately missed Patty Truesdell's introduction. Patty retired from teaching last year. She said she's running for school board because she promised her students she would continue fighting for them, and she thinks her experience as a teacher could be helpful on the board.
So this is the end of my sixth year on the board. This will be the third time that I'm up for election. I've been doing this now for, like I say, 6 years. It's been a long journey. I am a lifelong Peninsula resident. I was born in Kenai. I've lived in Kenai almost my entire life. I spent a short stint in Homer, but I've never left the Peninsula. My wife is also a local resident. We both graduated from KPBSD schools. Both of our children are currently attending KPBSD schools, and both of my parents were teachers in the district when I was growing up. My wife's mother was a teacher. So just a long history of involvement with education and with local government and things like that. I'm running for re-election because I think there's still a lot of work to be done. It takes a real long time to figure out a lot of the... It's a real educational process learning about how to be on the school board. It takes you 2 or 3 years to figure out what all the acronyms mean and to understand all the funding formulas. So honestly, I'm just not ready to be done. And I hope to be able to continue to serve the residents and the students as best I can.
And since you have gone through this once before, do you have anything that you would share with your fellow candidates about maybe what you learned about being on the board, or with listeners, what was surprising about it? What did you not expect?
I think one of the most difficult things to accept is the budget process and I don't want to say the mess. I've heard people say it's a hot mess. The budget process is very complicated because of the moving parts. You have the state of Alaska, who doesn't really tell you how much money you're going to get until the end of October, but you've already spent money. Oh, and then they tell you again in February, oops, we have more money you may or may not receive. You know, the borough, we ask the borough for money in April or May. They don't tell us until June. The system is just, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And when people listen to what we go through for the budget, they always say, well, why is it that way? And unfortunately, the answer is, you know, that's what the state law says. That's the way the politics are. It's really difficult. It's difficult to get people to understand the budget process. It's difficult to get people to understand the funding process. And, you know, it just takes a lot to learn.
Patty, does that sound like something you're up for tackling?
It sounds horrifying. It really does. I'll be honest. And I just want to say, listening to Dan, I think it's remarkable what he's done. I have absolutely no problem. I think what he's done is remarkable. He deserves a lot of credit. And I know I'm also a 46-year resident, and I think one of the biggest surprises to me has been over this process in the last 3 months that I've been attending board meetings is I think all the board members deserve a great deal of credit, and I think Dan does too for his service. So I just want to sit here and say he's remarkable what he's been doing. I have absolutely no problem with Dan's service. I think he's done a remarkable job. So my only question here is, you know, I'm also a longtime resident. My four children all graduated from the schools here. I think he's done a remarkable job. It's daunting. It really is. The budget thing. I want to learn. I want to serve.
Well, that is a wonderful sentiment. And we're going to check in with Susan Lockwood here. Same question. Introduce yourself and why are you running?
I am running for a position on the Board of Education because I'm concerned about the way our education is changing. I've taught elementary education throughout Alaska. I've taught school in Koyukuk, Anetuvik Pass in the Brooks Mountain Range, Anderson Village, Fairbanks on Fort Wainwright, Port Graham, and Nikolaev, which is outside Anchor Point. I am now retired and concerned that our children don't know enough about our founding fathers and appreciate the great country in which we live. Children are being influenced by liberal ideas. Let's get back to the basics of reading, writing, and math and honor our flag and the Pledge of Allegiance. That's the way I feel. That's the way I stand.
So that was Susan Lockwood, also running for District 1 Kalifornsky on the Board of Education. She was not able to be in the studio with us today, so I connected with her over the phone. So next question for our folks who are in the studio. Dan Castmore, we'll start with you on this one. Since you are the incumbent, if you are reelected, what would be your priorities?
You know, I think my priorities will continue to be what they've always been, which is our students. The motto that we have, that we all live by, is kids first, or, you know, what's best for the students. And that's what I fought hard to do. And it's not always easy. And I think the other challenge, and especially, it's become especially obvious during these negotiations, is that not everyone agrees on what that is, which can be even more difficult, because I have my opinion of what it means to put kids first. You might have your opinion of what it means to put kids first, and someone else may have their own. And so it's tough, you know. So the focus that I have taken is, when I say kids first, one of the most important things to me is number of kids in classrooms. My mother taught here in the 90s and, you know, into the 2000s. She taught kindergarten in a local kindergarten in a local elementary school here back when it was Sears. And she had as many as 30 students in her class in kindergarten. And it was unbelievable. You know, the stories she would come home with, I don't know how she made it through all those years. I don't know how any of the teachers back then, when we had PTRs that were that high, made it through. It amazes me. And so that's been one of my, one of my most important things here, is we can't repeat that. We can't get back to a situation where we have 30 kindergartners in a classroom, where the focus moves away from education entirely to what many people will refer to as herding cats. I know that can be offensive, and it's certainly not meant to me, but when you have to take care of 30 human beings, and you have to make sure they've had enough to drink, and you make sure they've had enough to eat, and then you're trying to also educate them, there's a point at which it simply is no longer effective. And so every time we've gone forward, you know, one of the first things I've said when we talk about our budget is, we are not taking this out of our classrooms. And if we are taking it out of our classrooms, we're sure as heck not taking it out of the K-1, 2, 3, where those students have such high demands and such high needs. And so to me, when I say, you know, that's the kids first, to me, kids first is making sure that we don't get to a situation where we create an environment where it's impossible to teach.
Okay. Patty, same question to you. If you were elected, what would be your priorities?
I agree with Dan. Isn't that terrible? I think we're going to have a really hard time today, he and I, because...
Yeah, you guys are making this hard for me
yeah,
today.
Because one thing I've got is a huge big mouth. And I agree with Dan that kids have to come first. And I also think our educators have to come first. One of the things that's concerned me now, as I've been listening, and maybe as I neared the end of my teaching career, it's breaking my heart when I sit at those board meetings and hear people run down our school system. It's wiping me out. And when I hear people actually say, why are we putting in dollars into these schools? Because, well, they're no good. Test scores are no good. I think our board needs to be not just advocating for our kids, but for our teachers as well. So I agree with Dan. The kids have to come first, but we also need to start advocating for our schools, for our public schools. And, you know, kids first and what's going on in our public schools, I agree that the numbers have to stay down in our classrooms. I think that, I don't know if we need to put tin cans out in the schools, but they keep saying you can't keep throwing money at the schools. Why not? Why not? I mean, we need more money, and we need to start telling our public that we need more money for these schools, because, you know, teachers are killing themselves out there. His mother was a teacher, parents were teachers, and we need more money. And we need to let our community know we need more money to fund these schools adequately. And we don't need 30 kids in a classroom. And teachers are killing themselves out there. So when I hear people at board meetings saying, too bad you chose to be a teacher, suck it up, buttercup, that kills me. And so volunteerism, so I just wrote that down. I'm a doodler. We need more volunteers. And when people come to the board meeting on the left side of the board and Dan is out there, he's trying to represent and do his best. How many of those people that are complaining have been in a public school classroom and seen what the teachers are going through? How many times have they stepped into? In the school where I taught in Hope, I have a 72-year-old lady that volunteers. I have a retired correctional officer that came in every morning and volunteered and played basketball with kids. When was the last time they visited a public school and saw? So we need to educate our community on what we need. And we need to educate our state leaders on what we need. And we need to advocate for our, not just our kids, but for our teachers and for our support staff, that they need more help. Throwing money at the problem? Yeah, let's throw some. Anyhow, my need would be the kids, the teachers, the support staff, educating our community that we need more support.
And we will hear from Ms. Lockwood. Same question to her. What would be her priorities if she were elected?
My priorities would be just to be sure that I'm very concerned that the children don't know enough about our history of the United States. And I think that that's one thing I would like to check out the school, see their curriculum. I'm very interested in education. In fact, I'm still teaching kindergarten, first grade, but that's at my church. But I'm very concerned that the kids just don't know enough about our country. And kids are starting to, the older children are starting to think poorly about our country, and it bothers me. Because our U.S. Constitution guarantees our right to worship God at home, at school, and even at school. And Benjamin Franklin proposed that the Constitutional Convention of 1787 began each day with a prayer. George Washington hoped that all nations would acknowledge the providence of the Almighty God and obey his will. And Thomas Jefferson himself warned the United States would never forget that their liberties are the gift of God. We're losing our liberties, and that's very important to me. And I don't like the fact that some of the schools in the United States, and I'm not saying it's our schools yet, but they're teaching sex education to young children, kindergarten, first, second, third. And I think that's wrong. And kids aren't allowed to silently pray in the lunchroom. They get in trouble for that. And now they're talking about asking kids their gender identity. And that, I don't think that needs to be in school. Let's just stick to the basics. Let's just stick to our good old reading, writing, and arithmetic.
So next question for you two in the studio here today, and you both touched on this in your last answer, priorities both being very student-focused. So this is a purposefully broad question, so you can take it whatever direction you would like. So student success, and feel free to define student success however you would like, whether that's graduation rate, whether that's how many students are going to college or going to trade school, or however you see that. What do you think the district could and should be doing to increase student success? Patty, we'll start with you on this one.
I've read the districts. The district's got their, now I'm missing my words for it, but they have their master plan, and I really support it, their website. I'll just take a deep breath and say, I have 4 graduates of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and I'm very proud of them. I think they're all a great success. And as I heard what Susan was saying, and so I'll just be honest, as I prayed about it this morning before I came here, my kids are a great success. 3 of them went straight off from these schools to college, and one of them opened up a small business here first. They got a wonderful education, like Dan was saying, from teachers here in this district. I could sit here for an hour and a half and easily name educators and coaches here that gave them a great start. Like I said, one of them chose to go her own way, and she ended up getting going another route. She opened up a small business here in Soldotna and ultimately traveled to Europe and got her education in Europe. And she has got a college degree now, but she chose her own way, as middle children tend to do. They all four received wonderful educations here. There were different quadrant learners. I think the school district here offers a wide variety of schools, charter schools, and things for kids to pick and choose what they want. We need to keep that going, you know, so that different learners can decide if there is a college education in their future, or if they want to get a tech. In Hope, we were offering welding for kids, auto mechanics. They need to learn skills. It's not about learning how to count change anymore. They need to learn. Remember, Kenai High School was teaching kids how to do all types of different. They need to learn computer skills. They need to learn everything. A success to me is learning how to figure things out and use their mind, problem solve. The other thing that we don't touch on a lot is schools need to be safe for kids. They need to be a safe place for them to learn to problem solve. And that's a different world than it was years ago. But students in my schools have to be safe, and they need to learn to problem solve. And that's a big thing nowadays. And so there's a lot to for our schools. But they need to learn to problem solve and think for themselves and have skills that they're going to need in the 21st century. And that's a heavy thing. But that would be a successful thing if they go from kindergarten to high school to graduation, and they can get a skill and learn and move into, not always college, but into a career.
And Mr. Castamore, student success, however you want to define that, what could and should the district be doing to support that?
When it comes to student success, I think that one of the mechanisms we have recently put into place is our key performance indicators. Excuse me. Key performance indicators are things which we are tracking, such as how are students performing in English in a certain grade level, because the statistics show that if a student can't read by a certain grade, they're much more likely not to ever graduate or go on to successful. So we've done some things like that, and I think those are working, and we're continuing to move forward. The district has done a lot with interventionalists, which are our people that we identify early students that are starting to fall behind, and we pull them out for one-on-one instruction to try and get them back up to speed, and I think that has significantly improved the quality of education around here. So I think we're doing a lot already to improve student success. You know, as a member of the school board, we've gone to Juneau a number of times, and we've talked to legislators. And one of the biggest challenges is figuring out what success means. And it means something different to every person. One of the biggest challenges when we go to Juneau, or whenever we talk to education naysayers, it's, okay, well, when you look at this score, it's not high enough. So we go back and we work on that score, and we bring it to the legislature and say, okay, we improved that score. Okay, but now how about this score over here? You know, we were told our graduation rates weren't acceptable. We have worked and spent a lot of money to get our graduation rates higher, and we still hear public education is broken. And I got to say, I'm really tired of hearing public education is broken, or that this district's education is broken. I would challenge anyone out there to come in and talk to me and actually show me any empirical evidence that shows that our school district isn't working. You know, our graduation rates are excellent. They're just in line with anybody else out there and probably higher. Last year, we were the first district in a long time to have a native student graduation rate, which exceeded our non-native student graduation rate. We had more native students graduating than our non-native students. Every other district in the state, it's usually, you know, 50 to 75% lower. So everyone likes to just tear down public education for whatever reason. And so defining student success is challenging. To me, student success is making sure that when our students walk out the door in 12th grade, or if they leave earlier because they get early graduation, or if they want to go straight to college in 11th grade, or whatever it is. It's our job to make sure that when they leave our care, that they are prepared to be successful in society. And not everyone is going to go to college, because not everyone is ready for college or is really good at it. I spent 4 years at college to get a two-year degree, and there's nothing wrong with that. College wasn't exactly my thing, so I've gone on to do something else. So we just have to make sure that we have students that walk out the door that can be successful. And I think that our district is doing a better job, but there's always progress to be made.
And in your comments there, you mentioned something that I think can be a little touchy for folks sometimes, and that is student testing, assessments. So on one hand, we have all these metrics now that we didn't used to have that can really drill down on specific areas of how kids are doing in various different realms at various different age groups. And that data is really useful for a lot of things, certainly as far as accountability goes. I mean, that's kind of the metrics that folks look at, as you mentioned, for good or for ill, you know, graduation rates and success rates on this assessment and that assessment. On the other side, though, you also hear frustration that, oh my gosh, our kids are just taking tests and taking tests and taking tests, and it's eating up classroom time, and we're teaching to the tests. You hear that one quite a bit. So what are your feelings on assessments? What do you think is the balance between having assessments, having those metrics, and maybe having flexibility in the classroom? And of course, it isn't all up to the district, right? A lot of this stuff is mandated, but are you feeling comfortable with where that balance is right now? Would you like to see that needle move somewhere? Dan, since you were talking about that, we'll start with you on this one.
Sure. You know, for some reason, standardized testing has become a four-letter word in education. It is a target that everyone across the country has decided, oh, standardized testing is bad. It doesn't indicate anything. It's just garbage. And I hear it from our teachers because it doesn't always show accurate information. But I think what I've learned on my time on the board is, and I've tried to explain this to people over and over that are constantly down on standardized testing. You know, I've said to my wife, I wish we didn't give the scores to the parents. She says, what are you talking about? I said, standardized assessments are not supposed to be for me to compare my kid to yours. You know, standardized testing is a method for us to evaluate how our staff is doing. And when I say this, it's clear, I need to make it so clear that we are not comparing one teacher to the other. We don't need to sit down and say, oh, this teacher's not as good. What we need to use the standardized testing data to do is, for an example, let's say we test all of our fourth graders in all of our schools. And in all of our schools, the average scores for history, and I'm just going to throw, you know, some subject out there, everyone is scoring a 10. And we have one school that's scoring an 8 with one teacher. That doesn't mean that teacher is doing anything wrong. It means we need to reach out to that teacher and say, hey, let's look at what the other teachers are doing that is successful, and let's look at what we can do to help you. Maybe you need some more professional development. Maybe you just had a difficult class that year. Maybe there's other issues. It's not to penalize our teachers. The goal with standardized testing is for us to be able to evaluate our staff and find out where we need to do better, where we can provide more professional development. Or maybe it's to identify, hey, you know, all of our classes are performing at a 70%, but we have this school that's at an 80%. We'll go to that school and say, what are you doing right? What can we use to copy that and make it better for everyone? So there's all this bad feelings about standardized testing, about how it's not an accurate representation because some of these tests talk about stoplights and how to work with a stoplight, and students in rural villages don't have stoplights. And I get that. I get that these tests are not perfect for gauging our students, but I think what's important is, you know, from my perspective, I don't really care how our students perform. This is all about us being able to say, where can we do better? Where can we improve? Where can we as a district, you know, solve problems that we see? How can we make sure that we're doing everything we possibly can? And as far as the balance of classroom time goes, I know it's painful, but we go to the legislature every year, and they say, well, we want to know this information. We want to know this other information. How do we know we're getting good value for our money? We want you to take this test, or the feds tell us to take this test. Well, so we have all these standardized tests that are mandated by the federal government. We have standardized tests that are mandated by the state of Alaska. And then on top of all that, our administrators and our teachers get together and say, hey, are there any tests that might actually be valuable to us? And then we offer those in addition. And so, you know, it seems like there's a lot of testing, and there is more testing today than there was before. But there's also a lot more data-driven decision-making going on where we can now say, instead of just guessing, well, you know, I think we need to spend more money on English, we can now say, okay, we can show using data that sixth grade English is starting to slip in some of these locations. We need to spend more money. We need to do more professional development there. So I know it's probably not going to make me popular that I don't hate all standardized testing, but I think it would just be helpful if we all look at it with a different perspective. This is not about me being able to say, oh, kid, look at me. My kid's smarter than your kid, or ooh, I want to compare. It's not what it's about. These are about how do we make it better.
All right. And Patty, back to you. Assessments. How do you feel about them in the district? Are they serving a good purpose? Is the balance to assessments and classroom time to your liking, or do you think something could be done differently there?
This will be the only area that Dan and I are going to disagree on, but that's okay because I really like him. I think he and I are going to be BFFs, but we're not going to agree on this one. I'm a classroom teacher, and we test way too much. And it really has to do with the type of learners. I mean, there are some good standardized tests, and there's some lousy ones. In the last couple of years, we've had some lousy ones. And what happens is you end up teaching to the test. And I've been there. I've absolutely seen it. I was in a classroom, I'll be honest, a couple years ago where I was actually in a classroom where a little kid said, hey, wouldn't we use a semicolon here, teacher? And the teacher said, yeah, but you don't need to learn that yet. You don't get that till next year. You won't be tested on that till next year. You know, we just can't be doing stuff like that, you know. I mean, you're just teaching to the test. And we don't want to be doing that. And you look at that language arts test on the Peaks. I swear to God, they're teaching about dangling participles and participle phrases and things that there's no reason that Dan or I or any of us are ever going to need to learn things like that. I'm an English teacher. And I had four children, as I said, and Dan, smart kids, kids that have gone on to college and have successful careers. And I had one daughter that was a quadrant one learner, and she passed every test, went on to college, and actually got a scholarship based on her SAT and ACT scores. I had another son that went on to college, and his ACT and SAT scores were dismal. He never could test for anything. Standardized tests don't tell how smart or how bright you are. You know, they're not representative of anything. But there are some good tests out there. The teacher ed performance is a great one. You get it the same day. Teachers get it the same day. You can immediately look at it and see how our kid is doing on reading or something. There are some good tests out there that teachers can use to assess and get the results immediately. Certainly kids need to be tested, and a good teacher is going to test kids on reading all day long. Years ago, the state of Alaska had a great testing thing where you could test kids, and they had standardized, and they had the benchmarks. It was before the federal government started requiring it. You know, a state should be testing kids. They should be benchmarking kids. Teachers aren't afraid of tests. Teachers should be, like Mr. Dan said, teachers should be, everybody should be watching teachers. We should have good teachers, and good teachers aren't afraid of being challenged or assessed or evaluated. And children do need to be evaluated. But a lot of these tests, don't kid yourself, teachers are watching them closely, and teachers are teaching to the test. And a lot of classroom time is being spent preparing kids to take these tests that should not be happening. Kids should be learning and not preparing to take a test. And really good teachers are still spending a lot of time in the classroom preparing kids to take standardized tests. And I'm opposed to it. You know, I've seen really good master teachers helping kids prepare for a test. And as a teacher, that frightens me because I know that really good learners are not doing well on tests. And they're really smart. You know, I've seen kids panic because they have to take a standardized test. And I know it doesn't really gauge how smart or how bright they are. And then a teacher is afraid, you know, of how well she, and then you do get districts where a teacher's evaluation is based on how well her kids did on a test. And so you're not going to get, you know, a good teacher's not afraid of being evaluated because she's working hard in the classroom. Years ago, they had some stupid thing about how if a teacher's class did well, she was going to get a bonus or he was going to get some kind of bonus. And teachers were all excited about that. To me, that's an insult. If you're working hard, you're not going to work harder if you think you're going to get some kind of cash bonus. Teachers work hard all the time. And I think no teacher's afraid of being, you know, evaluated. You welcome that by your employer. But I think we're over-testing kids. And I think there's different learners. We know that there's four types of learners. Kids that have to learn by doing, by seeing, you know, by touching and feeling it. And then there's my daughter, who can sit there and take all the information in, and she's going to score well on any kind of standardized test. But not all kids score well on standardized tests. That's just not how they learn. That's not how they're evaluated. And so a good teacher is assessing them all the time in other ways. So that's, standardized tests do not represent well how our kids are doing.
Okay.
Just my opinion.
And that was Patty Truesdell. We heard from Dan Castormore before that. We're going to check in with Susan Lockwood, who once again was not able to be in the studio with us today. And the question to Susan was, what do you think the district could and should be doing to increase student success?
Well, one thing is be more positive with the students. I've learned that a lot of the kids, when they come to school, they don't know their alphabet, which was typical when I taught in the bush, but I guess it's here is typical, and teachers really don't like that. I would like to see the math program. I don't really care for the Common Core, and I'd like to see that changed. I would like more emphasis on the subject matter. I would like less emphasis on opinions about gender identity. I would like more positive. I'd like the teachers to be more positive with the students, listen to them. I have a granddaughter who went to school here in one of the schools, and she just asked a question in the class, and the teacher made fun of her question. She was a four-point student, made her feel bad. So she went after school to talk to the teacher, and the teacher said, "Well, just read the information. You'll get it for yourself." Really bothered me. I wanted to come to the school and talk to the teachers, but or the principal. But I thought, no, I didn't want to get my granddaughter in trouble. There's just certain little things that can be fixed, I think. As far as the way the teachers teach and how they treat the students, I've noticed that there isn't as much family participation in the schools, and I think that there needs to be more parents taking part in what the kids are learning and how they're learning. I don't know. I know that if I was on the board, I would be going to all of the schools and talking with the principals and just kind of looking around and seeing what the curriculum is like and how the teachers are doing and the atmosphere in the schools. And I feel that if a teacher's more positive with a kid, the kid won't act out. There's a lot of kids acting out and a lot of disrespect, and I think that can be fixed.
And that was Susan Lockwood. This is the KDLL Kenai Conversation. We are speaking with folks running for District 1, the Kalifornsky seat on the KPBSD Board of Education. Susan, we've got via phone, and in the studio we have Patty Truesdell and Dan Castormore. We are at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a couple-minute break, and we will be back. Please stay tuned. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna.